FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 7-11-17. If that's a lucky number, then by all means, play the lotto. But I'm not playing it, and you shouldn't be playing it either with your credit or with your retirement. And Jeff Small is back with us. Jeff's with President of Arbor Financial. And hey, you also... Jeff, I didn't realize you teach retirees the art of financial self-defense. So welcome back.
That sounds pretty fancy, but thanks for having me back, Kerry. I appreciate it.
Hey, so an interesting article. A lot of consumers, millions of consumers, are getting an undeserved and unsolicited bump up in their credit scores through the alchemy of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which probably shouldn't exist anyway, and will probably have either be dramatically curtailed or even abolished if certain people in Washington have their way. How this helps people, I'm not sure, but a number of people are having increased credit scores as a result.
That's correct, Kerry. And I guess what we're seeing that after the last weekend of June, we saw new requirements come into play to basically eradicate or erase civil judgments and tax liens on about 12 million consumers' credit scores because the new reporting requirements are very stringent and there's no way they have the manpower to meet those requirements to document those liens and judgments for consumers.
Yeah. So, and it's not like the judgments weren't valid. It's not like the judgments will cease to exist. They're just not going to appear on the credit report. Therefore, it's as if they didn't exist.
Well, at least from a financial viability of, you know, qualifying for a loan, that's correct. But they will still be there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they will still be there. They're just not going to have a deleterious impact upon the consumer's credit rating. In fact, their absence will raise the credit ability. Obviously, if you're applying for a mortgage or some type of loan that requires a lien search, they're going to come up. And they will be reported, and you'll probably have to pay them before you can get that loan or that judgment if it doesn't kill your chances at all. But for credit cards and things of that nature, we seem to just be, as a society, socializing the losses. The banks don't have to pay them anymore. They've securitized it or whatever on these credit card debts and these personal loans, unsecured loans, and just let society basically underwrite these things.
Well, we do live in a credit-based economy, but generally credit reports, Kerry, were really favored to protect the institution. And so as far as that goes, I see this as the opposite of happening. Necessarily not people are going to get maybe a better credit rate, a better increase for their credit scores will enable them to get better debt structures for whatever car loans, credit cards, potentially mortgages, depending upon, you know, the validity of the judgment, of course, of the lien. But I think it's a boost for consumers, which really the whole system has been designed, the credit scoring system has been designed to be anti-consumer.
Yeah, agreed. It definitely will help them. And in my day when I started, there was no credit scoring, and you actually had to analyze the report to come up with a credit profile, whether this person was desirable or not. And then the age of securitization came, and the credit score enabled them to securitize all these debts, be they credit card debts, mortgage-backed securities, auto loans, whatever it is. And, you know, the state of finance in America has never been the same. But now we're getting into a point here where we're getting to credit exhaustion once again. Don't you think so?
Yeah, I really agree with that. I think, you know, pre-2008, we were at about $52 trillion of global and public private debt. Now we're at about $92 trillion public and private debt as a combined global effect. But if you notice what happened here recently, 2 weeks ago, we had every major car maker was down year-to-date in sales. Ford was down 5%. GM was down 2.9%. And that's because of the record 2015 and 16 years that they had. But those were really facilitated. Those record years in sales were facilitated by the looseness of the car credit facilities. I mean, anybody could pretty much get their car financed, no matter what your credit report report was they were giving away credit. And so when we do that, we tend to have a finite effect on, you know, sales in that regard. And that's very similar to what happened in the 2008-2009 credit debacle, mortgage credit crisis, where we had so many people could access credit, but yet, you know, they really weren't, they were victimized by the liquidity in credit, so to speak, at least from a consumer's perspective. The financial institutions got reparations and they got bailed out, but the consumer did not. They were left with those black marks on their credit report from a price in real estate, from a peak in real estate that really wasn't caused by the consumer. It was caused by the looseness, again, of the credit facilities. And so we keep going through this same cycle. We're in a very similar cycle in debt and credit. And the only way they can really get the economy to expand now without increasing jobs is to expand credit.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not seeing much choice here. You know, they, like you say, it's just the same thing over and over and over again. And where it ends, nobody knows. But at some point, it's just not going to work. And we're going to be left with an even worse situation because, you know, you can't just keep, you know, what the inference is that if we improve credit, accessibility to credit, we will improve, we'll create wealth effectively. And, you know, that's like borrowing yourself out of debt. Is that going to work, Jeff, in the long run?
Well, it's always been a short-term fix. You know, it's never been anything that's given us long-term growth and sustainability, you know, by way of creating wealth, creating jobs, creating a prospering and flourishing economy. And it's now become more of a tool more than anything. And sometimes that tool works to benefit the economy and other times it works against it. So it's fleeting at best on a short-term basis. It's not a permanent solution, Kerry.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So we go for short. It's like, you know, you have a kid and, you know, they're misbehaving, whatever, and you don't correct the behavior because in the present time, it's going to be easier because you don't have to make a scene in front of the neighbors or in the store. But in the long run, all you're doing is reinforcing bad behavior and basically paving the way for the next outburst.
Well, it sure seems that way because that, you know, we went through this with the S&L crisis in 87. We went through this again in 2001 when they decided to lower interest rates dramatically after 9/11. And we caused a spike in home prices from that period to 2007, where one of my dogs could have got a mortgage with just a social and a state of doc for income. Yeah. And then, of course, the peak and collapse in 08 and 09. And so now we're doing the same thing all over again to give you that fast, you know, playback on that timeline.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. And we're just not doing, we're not solving the underlying problem, right? We're really just not. And that's really the issue. You know, we're in this situation because of debt, because there's too much debt, not because there's not enough. And we're not even talking about student loans and all that great stuff, Jeff. I mean, when you start adding in all these different types of debt, it gets downright scary.
It really does. And, you know, you bring up a really good point. You know, with all that debt, Kerry, you know, we still have less home ownership than we did, you know, in the late 70s as a percentage. We have less people working in the workforce, you know, than we did in the late 70s. And so, you know, we've gone through these various debt cycles. And so the institutions are the ones that always seem to keep winning, where, you know, they're the ones getting bigger. They're the ones becoming monsters. They're the ones improving their bottom line, increasing their net profits. And it's not really being passed through to the consumer.
Yeah, that's really what it comes down to. And at some point, this is going to become unsustainable. You're not going to be able to keep doing it this way, right? I mean, it's got to end at some point.
You know, that's what everybody thinks. I kind of have a somewhat of an impartial point of view there. I really think that at some point the government's going to have to really start handing out money to keep it from imploding.
Right.
It'll be a new form of quantitative easing, but it'll be consumer quantitative easing as opposed to institutional quantitative easing.
Helicopter money, basically.
Yeah, and we've talked about that before. Yeah. But you know, that's what we see on the horizon at some point in the future is, you know, globalization and the cause of attrition and technology and, you know, the aging workforce and all these dynamics that are impacting the labor force participation are going to be impacted. You know, what are we going to do to sustain the economy and to prevent the next financial blowout like we had in 08 and 09? And I think they're going to have to print up money and actually give it to people.
Yeah, and that's when you might just have hyperinflation or serious onset of greater inflation than what we have now, right?
That would definitely cause a hyperinflation event because the central banking stimuluses of the world globally have not been able to create inflation to save their life, despite the trillions they've printed up, and they have printed up many trillions. So,
yeah, Yeah. So if you can't get inflation and you can't build the real economy to actually service this debt, then there's, I guess that's that liquidity trap that we've seen written about, that Keynes originally wrote about. So we're approaching this liquidity trap.
Yeah, we probably are very close to that point. So who knows where we're going to peak. The sentiments in the market on Wall Street are very strange right now. I heard something very interesting on CNBC yesterday. One of the pundits on there, a guest, not a regular, stated that if your stockbroker or your advisor is not bullish, then you need to fire him and find one that is. I had to chuckle at that. You know, the old adage of being a Wall Street cheerleader was really personified in that remark. Things just don't always go up. We will go through a cycle where things will peak and they will collapse. What the catalyst will be remains to be seen. Will it be debt? Will it be the recession? Will it be geopolitical? You know, will it be a Nixonian constitutional crisis? Who knows? None of us know. But we are certainly at a peak of things right now in terms of debt, equity values, asset prices across the board, and real estate are at peaks again. And So where do we go from here, Kerry?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I guess that's why you need to have a defensive posture in your portfolio. You can't just buy into the Wall Street cheerleaders, because eventually the Wall Street cheerleaders will run out of cheers, right?
Well, you know, real estate people sell real estate, and the Wall Street folks sell Wall Street. That's what they do. They don't really prepare folks for the type of cycle that we were in, and they don't modernize investments for folks. They basically just say, stay in the market, and no matter what happens, stay in the market, and that losses are acceptable. And I think losses being acceptable is completely unacceptable.
Yeah. Yeah. So better. Well, it just reminds me of what Bernard Baruch said. I got wealthy letting the other guy make the last 10%. Is this the time to take your profits and let the other people chase after the last 10%?
You know, I would say that's 90% correct. Despite the increase in earnings in some industries and the decrease in others, we are still in an environment that's really kind of at an all-time peak. And, you know, the Wall Streeters are acting like the bull market just started when it started 8.5 years ago. So
yeah.
I think that, you know, you need to be a realist here and say, you know, this can't go on forever.
Yeah, I am inclined to agree, but it can get, you know, I don't remember who said it. It might have been Keynes also, who said that markets can stay irrational a lot longer than you can stay solvent.
That's true. Very true.
Yeah. So I guess we're going to see what happens soon enough. Hey, if you got any questions for myself or Jeff, send an email to kl@kerrylutz.com. Jeff, where's the best place to find your work?
Really, the best place for your listenership to find me is at my website, arbor-financial.com. They can see my other media appearances and get highlights on my book that's coming out this fall on our website, and contact us and subscribe to our newsletter there as well.
Excellent. And as always, we'll have a link to your site, Jeff, in the show notes on our site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for our newsletter as well, and find us at Twitter, at Kerry Lutz, and Financial Survival Network is our Facebook page. Jeff, we'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks for coming on.
Awesome, Kerry. Thank you for having me back.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.